Welcome to The Late Disciple, a ministry of Truth Seekers Fellowship. We're in lesson number 18 today in the study about the Messiah. Tom Murray is currently answering the question, what kind of Messiah did the Old Testament reveal? Join us now as Tom continues and tells us an interesting fact about the translation of the Septuagint in 200 B.C.
Well, welcome back to our study in The Late Disciple on what kind of Messiah did the Old Testament scriptures actually reveal. And today, we're continuing in our Isaiah chapter 7 passage, and we haven't actually gotten into the passage itself. I'm laying some groundwork because of the objections that have been raised. Historically, the Jewish rabbis understood Isaiah chapter 7 through chapter 12 as being messianic, and they interpreted the very passage we're going to be looking at as referring to the Messiah. It was only after Jesus of Nazareth came to the earth that the rabbis changed their interpretation of what Isaiah chapter 7 was actually saying. But in preparation for us to really get into the actual passage itself, we need to talk a little bit about the controversy over the word Alma, A-L-M-A-H, in the Hebrew. And there's a debate over the exact meaning of this word Alma, and it's translated in your Bible probably by the term virgin in your English Bible, but in the Hebrew it is the word Alma, A-L-M-A-H. And in describing a young woman, there are actually three Hebrew words which Isaiah could have used in referring to, behold, I show you a sign, a virgin. The word he used was Alma, but there are actually three Hebrew words that he could have chosen from. The first Hebrew word that he could have used is Na'ara, and that is N-A-A-R-A-H, Na'ara. Now, Na'ara means damsel, and can refer to either a virgin, like it does in 1 Kings 1:2, but it can also refer to a non-virgin, like it does in Ruth chapter 2, verse 6. So he did not choose Na'ara, because that word allows for either a virgin or a non-virgin. Now, the second Hebrew word is Betula, B-E-T-U-L-A-H. Now, this too is commonly considered to mean a virgin, and it is commonly considered to be a virgin exclusively. But it is argued that if Isaiah had really meant to say a virgin, then he would have used this word, Bethula, instead of the word that he did use, Alma. Now, it is true that this word Bethula is often used to mean virgin, but it is not always used to mean virgin. For example, in the prophet Joel in chapter 1, verse 8, this word Bethula was used in reference to a widow who obviously would not have been a virgin. In Genesis chapter 24, verse 16, because this word Bethula does not exclusively mean virgin, the writer had to add in Genesis 24:16 the little phrase, had never known a man, in order to clarify what he meant in that he was talking about a virgin. He wouldn't have had to add that phrase if Bethula always meant virgin exclusively. Again, in Judges chapter 21 in verse 12, the phrase is added again, had not known a man, and it had to be added in that particular passage to give it its precise meaning, because the word Bethula does not exclusively mean a virgin. And then there is the third word that Isaiah did use, called Alma, A-L-M-A-H. Now, Alma means in Hebrew a virgin, a young virgin, and a virgin of marriageable age, meaning she's old enough to be married. Now, this particular word, Alma, A-L-M-A-H, is used seven times in the Hebrew Old Testament. And not one time in those seven is it used to describe a married woman. And on that particular point, there is no debate among the rabbis or the liberal theologians. For instance, let's look at those seven times. You will find Alma used in Genesis 24:43, and in contrast to 24:16 that we've already looked at above, verse 43 in Genesis 24 requires no additional qualifying remark like knew no man, since the one word Alma alone is sufficient to mean virgin exclusively. Furthermore, the term Alma is used of Rebekah, who was obviously a virgin at the time of her marriage to Isaac. The second time Alma is used in the Old Testament is in Exodus chapter 2, verse 8, and there it is used in reference to Miriam, who was Moses' sister, and she was a virgin. The third time the word Alma is used in the Old Testament is in the book of Psalms in chapter 68, verse 25, and it is used there in reference to the royal procession of virgins that is preceding the king. Now, since the king in the context of Psalm 68 is God himself, absolute virginity would be required of these royal procession of virgins. It is unthinkable that God would allow unchaste, unmarried women to be in this procession of the virgins. Then the fourth appearance is in the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon, in chapter 1, verse 3, and here the term Alma is used in context where purity is required in marriage. The virgin would be someone who would come to the marriage bed as a virgin in marriage. And then later, the fifth use is in Song of Songs, chapter 6, verse 8, and the word Alma is used to contrast with the word for wives and concubines, because wives and concubines would obviously be non-virgins. And so in 6:8, the word Alma is used to show that it means virgin as opposed to wives, concubines, or non-virgins. Then in Proverbs, we have the sixth appearance of Alma in chapter 30, verses 18 and 19. And the word Alma is used in verse 19 to contrast with an adulteress in verse 20, which is obviously a non-virgin, the adulteress. Then the seventh and last time that Alma is used in the Old Testament is in this passage in Isaiah chapter 7 that we're looking at in verse 14. My point is that since all of the above six references that I've given you in the Old Testament mean a virgin, what possible reason could we give for making Isaiah 7:14 the only exception to the meaning of Alma in the whole Old Testament? Everyone, including the rabbis as well as liberal theologians, have to agree that Alma means an unmarried woman. If the woman in Isaiah 7:14 were a non-virgin, then God would be performing a sign involving fornication or sexual illegitimacy. It's unthinkable that God would sanction sin like that, and in any case, even if he did, which he didn't, what would be so unusual about an illegitimate baby that could possibly constitute a sign to any of the nation of Israel? What kind of sign is there in an illegitimate baby? So as far as the ancient Jewish writers were concerned, there was no argument about Isaiah 7:14 predicting a virgin birth. Now, I've told you before, there was a translation from the Hebrew language to the Greek language of the entire 39 books of the Old Testament made about 200 years before Christ. That translation is called the Septuagint. And that Septuagint, the writers were considered master Hebrew translators or Hebrew language majors. Now, the Jewish translators in about 200 BC who made the Septuagint translation, and you must realize that they lived much closer to the times of Isaiah than anyone does today, any rabbi or any liberal theologian today, when they translated Isaiah 7:14 from the Hebrew to the Greek, they used, in place of the Hebrew word alma, they used the Greek word parthenos, P-A-R-T-H-E-N-O-S, parthenos, which very clearly and exclusively in the Greek language means virgin. There can therefore be no doubt that the unique event which God is promising in Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14, as a sign, is the miraculous conception of a son by a Jewish girl who is still a virgin but of marriageable age. Now, you remember the story I told you about the two kingdoms of Syria and Israel and the pressure they were putting on the king of Judah, or Ahaz. Now, the reason that is going to happen here is God, through Isaiah, is going to come to Ahaz, even though he is not a God-fearing and a God-worshipping king. He's a wicked king. But God will come to Ahaz and will tell Isaiah to tell Ahaz, not, first of all, not to be afraid, and secondly, not to worry about the king of the north of Israel, and not to worry about the king of Syria, that God is going to take care of them, and Ahaz doesn't need to even involve himself with the Assyrians, because God is going to take care of that. Now the question becomes, why is God willing to communicate with this God-rejecting, this God-dishonoring king of the southern tribe of Judah, when he is trying to embrace the Assyrians? Why would God come to his rescue, and why would God go so far as to offer him a sign, that is Ahaz, that would come to pass in his lifetime if he would trust God instead of trusting the Assyrians against the king of Israel and the king of Syria? Well, we're out of time, so you're going to have to come back and find out why God did that in our next broadcast.
Thank you, Tom. Well, isn't this a great series? You can get copies of this series by calling us at Truth Seekers Fellowship. The number is 901-685-3385. Outside Memphis, call toll-free 866-685-3385. And you can also reach us on our website. The address is www.milktomeat.org. While there, you can sign up for a free newsletter, hear the radio programs, and correspond with us through email. Now make plans to join us tomorrow right here for The Lay Disciple.